In chapter 8 of Judges, and the first half a dozen verses in chapter 9, we find that Gideon has kind of fallen prey to the sins that he had fought against for so long, risking his life to save Israel. He made an ephod, if you remember that. And instead of being a joyous thing, it became a snare to him and his family. After the battles with the Midianites, Gideon lived about 40 years. And he not only fell prey to those things which he fought against so much, but he had a lot of wives. He fostered 70 sons. We're not told how many daughters, but he fostered 70 sons from his many wives. But he took a woman who was from the city of Shechem. Some say she was not Hebrew, that she was a mix between a Canaanite and Hebrew. But they had a son, and he was named Abimelech. Shechem was a very ancient city. We find that mentioned way back in Genesis. Abraham camped there. It was in between the coastal plains that were very fertile and the Jordan Valley, which was very fertile. And so it was a crossroads for many of the caravans that came through there. And of course, because of that, it was a very wealthy city. Gideon happened to be from Manasseh, and his wife, or his concubine, pardon me, who fostered Abimelech, was located in the tribe of Ephraim. And there was some animosity between these two tribes for centuries. And I think it probably came from the time when Jacob, back in the time of Egypt, blessed Ephraim, even though he was the youngest. He got the first blessing. And Manasseh was placed second on that. And so I think there was some animosity there over the ages. So now we come to the study of Judges chapter 9, and we're going to learn a little bit about a man called Abimelech. And today's study is an example of the evil of the time when everybody did what was right in their own eyes. People didn't take God seriously. They did what they wanted. They failed to obey God and didn't drive out the people that they were supposed to drive out of the land. And so living with these other people, they were affected by their practices of idols and a lot of cruel practices that they got involved in as well. In some Bible stories we read about, we learn about leaders who were positive, were examples of what we should do today and what qualities we should have. We learn about God's blessings and his grace on the lives of those who serve him. This particular story highlights a man's sin and the condition when we ignore God's principles and go our own way and do what we like. This chapter shows us examples of ungodly leaders and the wicked characteristics that and qualities that they had. This is a story of what we shouldn't do. It also highlights the results of those bad choices, or God's justice, basically. So when we see Abimelech and Shechem, do these things, we need to do exactly the opposite. We're reminded that although God is a loving God and merciful, he is also just. If we ignore his principles and live our lives and do just what we like, there's going to be consequences and there's going to be justice. We need to remember the old adage, you reap what you sow. God, unfortunately, is almost never mentioned in this chapter, except for his plan of justice for these people. And why is this? They're not acting for or from God or with God. He's left out entirely out of their plans. So let's look at this man, Abimelech, for a few moments. He's a good talker, very convincing. He lusted for power. He was jealous. He ruled by pride. He had absolutely no principles. He had no morals. He was willing to do anything to get what he wanted, even murder. He did not value human life. And he hung out with worthless people. That brings us to us today. We're known by the people we associate with. If you sleep with dogs, you end up getting fleas, that type of stuff. So we are known by the people that we associate today. This is why it's so important for us to make godly relationships and avoid those that will those harmful associations that will cause us to stray. Abimelech, we know, was extremely cruel. He killed all of his family members, with the exception of one. And they weren't particularly enemies, but he eliminated possible family rivals. And this is the first time that, if I remember, that it was recorded in the Bible about people gaining kingdoms, and they killed who they thought were going to be their rivals. Zimri, Baasha, Athaliah, Jehu, I think, was one of them that did that. They're found in Chronicles and Kings, 2 Kings and 1 Chronicles. And it talks about them killing their brothers to eliminate possible rivals. In the New Testament, we found that Herod did the same thing. He even killed some of his sons. So it wasn't something that was real rare, but it did happen. It happens today in some of these third world countries in Africa, for instance, in Saudi Arabia and Yemen, places like that. They're knocking off each other left and right and trying to solidify their power. If people don't worship God, then cruelty often is the result of that lack of worship. We have value ourselves because God has told us we're valuable. And if we ignore God and reduce this world of what we see, will eliminate the value of human life and be capable of heinous crimes. And we see that today, all the time. I fully believe that if we removed all the governments in this world today, sins like stealing and robbery, murder, rape, other violent crimes would absolutely skyrocket. A lot of people who seem good and kind, I think, would also disrespect human life. And I think all kinds of chaos and disorder would result in that lack of government. And I know someone might say, well, that happened a long time ago. Things are different today. People wouldn't act like that now. Look at the genocide that goes on today in this world. Look at the slave rings. People with runaway children are afraid that they've been kidnapped and turned into sex slaves and this type. These things happen even here in the United States on a pretty regular basis. People are the same. Sin's the same. These things still exist. They're just hidden because of the law. So you take away those limitations and it would be just as bad or worse than what we see in this chapter that's going to happen. So although these people in this chapter were ignoring God and doing what they liked, God wasn't ignoring them. God doesn't just disappear and cease to exist just because people don't take him seriously. He's still there. He's still watching. He is still the sovereign God. He will still judge sin. Not going to let us get away with sin. Bible tells us that he judgment will come, and that swiftly. He's not long gone or far away. He's very near to us. And he is involved. He's the creator, and he is involved in our creation. If we're sinful, this chapter should be a warning to us. It is encouraging if we are faithful and following God, no matter how bleak and how dark the future might look, God is still in control. The world looks hopeless, and all the evil we see today, rampant abortion, immorality, homosexuality, genocide, wars, civil wars, coups, diseases. But God is still reigning on his throne. And we need to always remember to be faithful to the Lord. Let's go ahead and read verses 1 through 6 in chapter 9. And Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal, went to Shechem to his mother's relatives. And he spoke to them and to the whole clan of the household of his mother's father, saying, speak now in the hearing of all the leaders of Shechem, which is better for you, that 70 men, all the sons of Jerubbaal, rule over you, or that one man rule over you? Also, remember that I am your bone and your flesh. And his mother's relatives spoke all those words on his behalf in the hearing of all the leaders of Shechem. And they were inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, he is our relative. They gave him 70 pieces of silver from the house of Baal-berith, with which Abimelech hired worthless and reckless fellows, and they followed him. Then he went to his father's house at Ophrah and killed his brothers, the sons of Jerubbaal, 70 men on one stone. But Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left, for he hid himself. All the men of Shechem and all Beth Milo assembled together, and they went and made Abimelech king by the oak of the pillar, which was in Shechem. Sharon, would you read 7 through 21?
Sure. Now when they told Jotham, he went and stood on top of Mount Gerizim and lifted his voice and called out. Thus he said to them, listen to me, O men of Shechem, that God may listen to you. Once the trees went forth to anoint a king over them, and they said to the olive tree, reign over us. But the olive tree said to them, shall I leave my fatness with which God and men are honored and go wave over the trees? Then the trees said to the fig tree, you come reign over us. But the fig tree said to them, Shall I leave my sweetness and my good fruit and go wave over the trees? Then the trees said to the vine, you come reign over us. But the vine said to them, shall I leave my new wine, which cheers God and men, and go wave over the trees? Finally, all the trees said to the bramble, you come reign over us. The bramble said to the trees, if in truth you are anointing me as king over you, come and take refuge in my shade. But if not, may fire come out from the bramble and consume the cedars of Lebanon. Now, therefore, if you have dealt in truth and in integrity in making Abimelech king, and you have dealt well with Jerubbaal and his house, and have dwelt with him as he deserved, for my father fought for you and risked his life and delivered you from the hand of Midian, but you have risen up against my father's house today and have killed his sons, 70 men on one stone, and have made Abimelech, the son of his maidservant, king over the men of Shechem, because he is your relative. If you then have dealt in truth and integrity with Jerubbaal and his house this day, rejoice in Abimelech, and let him also rejoice in you. But if not, let fire come out of Abimelech and consume the men of Shechem and Beth Milo, and let fire come out of the men of Shechem and from Beth Milo and consume Abimelech. Then Jotham escaped and fled and went to Beer and remained there because of Abimelech his brother.
Jotham was the youngest son who escaped by hiding. Abimelech was given 70 pieces of silver from the coffers of this Baal, Berith, that the people of Shechem were worshiping. And he hired a bunch of ruthless people and went down, and he gathered up his stepbrothers, or half-brothers, and he took them one by one, and he slaughtered them on this stone. And they talk about this stone being it had one time been an altar of Baal, but it was one that Gideon had torn down years before. So this was some sort of revenge for that, other than at least Abimelech used it for that purpose. Remember the story, I think it was in Deuteronomy, about Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. And we're told back in those, and I think it's Deuteronomy, I forgot now, chapter 11, if I remember, I can't remember, but it was in Deuteronomy that Moses gathered the people. Or Joshua gathered the people between half of them, six tribes on Mount Gerizim, and right across the valley, a short distance, was Mount Ebal, and he put six tribes there. And the people who were on Mount Gerizim shouted the blessings to the priests, the Levites, and the head men down in the valley, the children of Israel. And the curses were yelled out by the six tribes that were on Ebal. Now we find here is Jotham on Gerizim above Shechem. And remember that, I think it was Larry spoke about that a long time ago, about these two hills being very close. And the acoustics are such that you could speak almost in a normal voice and you could hear them across the valley and on the other mountain. And so here's Jotham crying out to the people of Shechem, look what you've done. You've abided by this. You've taken and paid for the slaughter of my family. You made Abimelech king, and he is now talking a parable to them and putting a curse on them. And we'll see what happens a little ways down the road. Then he flees to an area called Beer, and we run it, the children of Israel camped there. I think this means a well or something like that. One time the children of Israel in their travels in the wilderness camped there at that well. It's down south quite a ways. Okay. Jane, will you read 22 through 25?
Okay, there we go.
Thank you.
Now Abimelech ruled over Israel 3 years. Then God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the men of Shechem. And the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech in order that the violence done to the 70 sons of Jeroboam might come and their blood might be laid on Abimelech, their brother, who killed them on the men of Shechem, who strengthened his hands to kill his brothers. And the men of Shechem set men in ambush against him on the tops of the mountains, and they robbed all who might pass by them along the road, and it was told to Abimelech.
Several comments that were made about this is that God sent an evil spirit between the two, and that the men of Shechem and Abimelech and his group were now at odds. And Shechem laid in ambush and robbed Abimelech's people as they moved back and forth. And Abimelech was living several miles away at the time, but somebody went and told him. Now we'll see what happens. Jimmy, would you read 26 through 33?
Yes. And Galen, the son of Ebed, came with his brothers and went over to Shechem. And the men of Shechem put their confidence in him. And they went out into the fields and gathered their vineyards and trod the grapes and made merry and went into the house of their God and did eat and drink and curse Abimelech. And Gael, the son of Ebed, said, "Who is Abimelech and who is Shechem that we should serve him? Is not he the son of Jeroboam and Zebul, his officer? Serve the men of Hamar, the father of Shechem, for why should we serve him? And would to God this people were under my hand, then would I remove Abimelech." And he said to Abimelech, "Increase thine army and come out." And when Zebul, the ruler of the city, heard the words of Gaal, the son of Ebed, his anger was kindled, and he sent messengers to Abimelech privately or craftily, saying, "Behold, Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his brethren be come to Shechem, and behold, they fortify the city against you. Now, therefore, up by night, thou, the people that are with you, and lie in wait in the field. And it shall be that in the morning, as soon as the sun is up, you shall rise early and set upon the city. And behold, when he and the people that are with him come out against thee, they may do thou to them what you shall find occasion."
Okay. John, would you read 34 through 41 for us?
All right. Starting at verse 34. "So Abimelech and all the troops set out by night and took up concealed positions near Shechem in four companies. Now Gaal, son of Ebed, had gone out and was standing at the entrance of the city gate just as Abimelech and his troops came out from their hiding place. When Gaal saw them, he said to Zabal, "Look, people are coming down from the tops of the mountains." Zabal replied, "You mistake the shadows of the mountains for men." But Gaal spoke up again, "Look, people are coming down from the central hill, and a company is coming from the direction of the divine's tree." Then Zabal said to him, "Where is your big talk now, you who said, 'Who is Abimelech, and we should be subject to him?' Aren't these the men you ridiculed? Go out and fight them." So Gaal led out the citizens of Shechem and fought Abimelech. Abimelech chased them all the way to the entrance of the gate, and many were killed, and they fled. Then Abimelech stayed in Arumah, and Zabal drove Gaal and his clan out of Shechem.
Yes, ma'am. 42 through. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And it came about on the next day that the people went out into the field and they told Abimelech. So he took his people, divided them into three companies, and laid in wait in the field. And he looked, and there were the people coming out of the city, and he rose against them and attacked them. Then Abimelech and the company that was with him rushed forward and stood at the entrance of the gate of the city. And the companies rushed. And he demolished the city and sowed it with salt. Now when all the men of the tower of Shechem had heard that, they entered the stronghold of the temple of the god Berith. And it was told Abimelech that all the men of the tower of Shechem were gathered together. Then Shechem went up to Mount Zalman, and he and all the people who were with him, and Abimelech took an axe in his hand and cut down a bough from the trees and took it and laid it on his shoulder. Then he said to the people who were with him, "What you have seen me do, make haste and do as I have done." So each of the people likewise cut down his own bough and followed Abimelech, put them against the stronghold, and set the stronghold on fire above them, so that all of the people of the tower of Shechem died, about 1,000 men and women.
Shows us what a nice man Abimelech was. He not only killed the men of the city, but he didn't care. He killed the women as well. Sowing salt so that you couldn't grow anything was a common thing that they did back in those days. But Abimelech has killed all these people who at one time were with him, but had been turned against him. Faye, can you read 50 through 57?
Okay. Then Abimelech went to Thebez, and he encamped against Thebez and took it. But there was a strong tower in the city, and all the men and women, all the people of the city, fled there and shut themselves in. Then they went up to the top of the tower. So Abimelech came as far as the tower and fought against it. And he drew near the door of the tower to burn it with fire. But a certain woman dropped an upper millstone on Abimelech's head and crushed his skull. Then he called quickly to the young man, his armor bearer, and said to him, "Draw your sword and kill me, lest men say of me, 'A woman killed him.'" So his young man thrust him through, and he died. And when the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, they departed, every man to his place. Thus God repaid the wickedness of Abimelech, which he had done to his father by killing his 70 brothers. And all the evil of the men of Shechem, God returned on their own heads. And on them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Jerubbaal.
It's So we see that God has not forgotten these people. God has not forgotten the cruelty and the sins that they committed. And so Jotham's parable his curse is coming true. God has repaid Abimelech and also the men of the city of Shechem. That's the last we know of the young man named Jotham. He went down to the area of what is called Beer, and he just disappears into history there. So anybody have any comments about this chapter? Be sure and unmute, but, you know, if you have some. What kind of lessons do you think we could learn from this today?
If God doesn't sanction it, it isn't going to work in the long run. Verse 57 is interesting. And all the evil of the men of Shechem, God returned on their own heads. It came back around.
Yes. Yes, we find, you know, they were just as guilty in the murder of Gideon's sons as Abimelech. They paid for their demise. They supported Abimelech monetarily and paid for his men who were hired to kill these 70 sons. So the blood was on their head just as well. It's really sad because there for 40 years after Gideon subdued the Amorites and the eastern tribes, they wanted him to be king. And Gideon declined, although I think he was revered as a man who was king, and not in name, but in all actuality, he just about ruled that area of Israel. You know, what's surprising to me, just as a side note, is that all this time we're talking about, up until now, we've talked about the men of Judah, the men of Ephraim, Manasseh, the area around Gilead, east of the Jordan. Zebulun, I think we talked a little bit about, Naphtali. But the northern tribes and some of the most southern, we've not heard anything about at all. Everything has been really quite up in Dan and in the northern tribes. God doesn't tell us about that at this particular time. So I have always been curious about what is happening with them. Are they staying faithful to the Lord, or are they going off? They're in the same boat as the rest of the tribes. They have not driven out the Canaanites and the Amorites and the Hivites and so forth that they did battle with and tried to run out. So they're living with those people. It's just up until now, it's been very quiet about those tribes. Nothing has been said about them. How can we take these things and apply them to our lives today? You know, we talked about the without laws and so forth. How would we be? We'd be just like these people. We'd be free to do whatever we want. Can you imagine what life would be like, even here in the United States, if we didn't have the laws to suppress some of these things? Be a sad state of affairs. You talk about being armed. Wow. You'd have to have your own little cities with fortresses and so forth like that in order to survive. Anybody else have any comments?
I saw in the footnote that Abimelech means my father is king.
Yes.
And I thought that was interesting because he was not king, but maybe.
Well, you know, he used that connection You know, these people knew, they remembered Gideon. They didn't respect him, but they remembered Gideon. And they knew that Abimelech was Gideon's son. And he used that to his advantage, saying, well, you know, after all, I'm Gideon's son, but I'm also your relative. You know, this is my mother, and you're my uncles and aunts and cousins and so forth like that here in Shechem. You know, would you rather have just one person rule over you, or would you like to be divided up by 70 people? You know, you should choose me because I'm your blood kin. So he used that to promote himself to the people of Shechem. And, you know, of course, he had people out stumping for him, relatives, and they convinced the leaders in Shechem that, oh, well, hey, yeah, this guy's reasonable, you know. So let's go ahead and make him king. We have to remember, too, that this is regional. This is not all the 12 tribes of Israel. He's a regional king. I think probably pretty powerful because of the location of Shechem and how strategically it was located on the trade routes through there. And so he, being in control of that one particular city, because of the trade routes coming through there, he controlled a rather large area. But he still was not anything other than a regional person. He was king in that area because the city of Shechem made him king. We find that was rare in the rest of the Bible and even into the New Testament. And today, you know, we see this effects over in the Arabian Peninsula and so forth like that in some of these countries. Turkey had some problems some time ago like that. But they bumped off their brother, you know, their brothers and even sisters in some cases, in order to consolidate their control of the country. So, it's kind of interesting to know that that's what actually goes on today, even in what we'd call a civilized world. Anybody else have any comments? You're awfully quiet, Lenny.
Yeah.
Thank you for your comment. That's singular. Hey, we appreciate you, brother. Anybody else have anything to say? Okay, well, that's all I had about chapter 9 tonight. Read the next couple of chapters. We're going to learn about the next couple of guys, Tola and a man named Jair, and we're going to learn a whole lot about them, and we'll get on past them next week and study another judge that has some history behind him.